Welcome to the Lucrative Podcast, episode number 2. Back at you again with a fresh new episode. If you enjoyed the last episode that we did with Holly Gautier, I think you're really going to enjoy this one because it's another great chat in a similar sort of vein with, of course, another musician as well. And I'm looking forward to just listening back to this one and chilling out, you know, because I've just had a bit of a crazy week. I had to do a submission recently for a competition that I'm part of. It's called Radio Star, and it's all about finding new radio presenting talent. So, of course, it's quite an important competition for me. You know, it's a good lifting platform, something to get me going, maybe get some eyes and ears out on me from an industry perspective. And, of course, I leave all the important work that I needed to do right until the last minute. Something that I'm very good at is procrastinating. I don't know, maybe it's something in my star sign or something. I don't really go in for that kind of thing, but I'm thinking there must be some sort of other reason why I can't seem to shift this thing that I'm in, is to leave in work until the last minute. I'm just excellent at doing this kind of thing, and this was another example. I've managed to get it done. I think it's pretty good, but we should find out in a few weeks or so if it's turned out well. So I'll let you know. I'll let you know how that one's turned out. But anyway, let's get into today's episode. This is with Johnny Foster of Hardwick Circus, a band that's actually based in Carlisle. And being a Cumbrian lad myself, you can tell why I was very excited to have this chat. Johnny is the lead singer of the band, and if I was going to put things in layman's terms, because it's very difficult to kind of describe the genre, I think, of Hardwick Circus, I think of them a lot of the time as a classic rock band, but they really do just cover the gambit, and really there's so many different influences mixed in there, so there's definitely something for everyone with this group. They've got a new album coming out on July 23rd that's called The Borderland, and there's a fantastic song off this new album that's available everywhere, and it's called Walking on Broken Glass. I've actually been playing it quite a bit, plugging it, if you will, on my radio show Sounds Like Nostalgia that plays on Bolt Radio, the internet radio station. And I'll make sure to link to that in the descriptions below if you want to go and check that out. But yeah, let's get into this episode with Johnny Foster. It was a great chat. I enjoyed thoroughly talking to him and nerding out over some blues musicians later on that we had in the chat. I think I managed to keep my cool a little bit, but we were talking about blues musicians and all sorts later on, so that was a fun moment. That, just as a quick side note, this conversation was in fact recorded on the 27th of February, and once again I had my co-host at the time, Amy Blythe, who was sitting in on this interview again, and she was asking a few questions to Johnny as well. But it's a great chat. Let's get into it. Episode number 2 of Lucrative with Johnny Foster.
So you've locked down with like the whole band, haven't you?
Yeah, we were kind of lucky that at the start of this whole thing back in March, well, we were meant to be going to South by Southwest in Texas, Austin, Texas. And that was a big opportunity for us. That was the first real, we'd played Eurosonic in Holland, but otherwise this is the first big international gig we had where we can perform showcases and invite kind of industry people along to watch what we've been working so hard on for so long. But that got cancelled. So we thought, well, what can we do now? Like, you know, we've spent the last year together. We're meant to be going to America together. So we decided to do the least American thing possible. And we booked a farmhouse in Yorkshire. And we huddled there for about a month. And it was on top of the hill, right above the river, in the Swaledale Valley. And it was just us and the sheep, pretty much, and nothing around for about 10 miles. And for us, coming from Carlisle, it was really unique. So we locked up together and we've been together ever since. It's good. I mean, we're back in Carlisle now, but I think why I love being in a band so much is it's we are music driven, but it's all about, you know, the camaraderie of it, and having, you know, toured the UK out of our Riot van for the last 3 or 4 years, you know, staying in hotel rooms together, in small backstage areas together, you know, our breathing patterns are well synced up now. So we're kind of fortunate that, like, I think we know when we're pressing people's buttons and when we should back off a little. So it's been good, you know, it's been creative. It's given us a chance to work on new material. We've finished recording our album, The Borderland. So it's been good. As I say, we've been able to flex our creative muscles, you know, whereby being on the road 24/7, usually these ideas just get temporarily shelved. So it's been a difficult period for everyone. Touring is our lifeblood, but we've luckily been able to channel our creativity into new avenues.
Me and Amy have actually seen you guys a couple of times, but we're, you know, separately on different occasions. I saw you at Kendall Calling when you were there, and also when you did Bootleggers in Kendall.
Well, that's the thing. We love playing anywhere. You know, we play small music venues, you know, independent venues, through prisons. We've been doing a lot of prison gigs. So we go into prisons and we play for the inmates, usually in the chapel. So we have, I suppose, played churches before. And we play for the inmates, do about an hour's set. And then afterwards, we do a Q&A session where we kind of invite the inmates to ask questions about being in a band or what life is like in the music industry. And also, during the set, we invite inmates on stage to sing or rap with us, or to give poetry readings, or to play one of their songs, and we'll be the backing band.
So,
you know, prisons, we've done canal boats, we've done wrestling arenas, you know, summer fates, we've done, you know, festivals, we'll play anywhere.
I've got to ask, with playing in a prison, what, how does that sort of affect the set list? Are you playing like more upbeat songs, like some of your more classic rocky sort of ones, or do you like to bring it down a notch and like play some more somber ones? I don't know. Does it affect much of like the set list that you consider, or is it just another gig?
Well, it does, because the environment is like nothing we'd. Well, the first time we played, it was a whole new experience. It was a new, none of us had ever been to prison before. it's you know, you're playing for an audience of a very varied background, all with totally different pasts, who never get to usually engage with this type of performance whilst in jail. You know, this is not the kind of thing that they get frequently enough, I think, it's you know, this is a great kind of means of rehabilitation in some ways for some of them. So we're proud that we're able to be involved in some way. And when it comes to the set list, it's, as I say, you've got to take all that into account. You've got, you know, the church warden will be there. You'll have the officers there just checking everything's okay. And it always runs really smoothly. Everyone, they appreciate the songs we do. We tell tales about the songs so they can get involved with them as we work through the set list. And it's a unique experience for everybody involved. And we're just very grateful that they, the prisoners, kind of listen to us, and, or as in listen to the music, and have invited us back. You know, we're very grateful for the opportunity.
I can imagine. Yeah, that sounds really like an cool, awesome, like, opportunity to be able to do as a band. Like,
we did one set, and there was a guy on stage rapping with us, and we thought, well, this guy's incredible. We have to get this geezer on some of our recorded material. And we finished playing, and it turns out he was in the So Solid crew, which is a big rap group. You might not have heard of them, but check them out after the podcast. And yeah, so that blew our minds a little bit.
Sure, nice.
That's
nice.
Really cool.
Well, this was even on our first trip. So we played at Rochester Prison, and it was our first real experience of collaborating with the inmates. So it opened up a whole world of doors for us. Like, it's just, you know, the inmates have, so you know, a lot of artistic potential that, you know, we want to help tap into, that people ought to see and hear. So when this guy came on and did this incredible rap, and then we found out afterwards off one of the prison wardens, the AA who was in the Subsonic crew, it was just like, oh my Lord, like an incredible experience that we are planning on doing another prison tour again. Yeah, come the summer in August. So perhaps 15 prisons. We're going to go round. We're going to tour them all. Going to drive the bus in, hopefully, play for the inmates, do the Q&As, workshop with them, even invite them onto the bus and record a radio show with them. So we can hopefully use that at our end, but also we can use it for prison radio. So we can expose all this great art that's going on inside the jail walls.
Sounds great, yeah. Like, there's so much potential. And maybe a collaboration on the cards as well with this dude.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, and that's the other thing. It's these performances extend past us playing for the 1.5 hours. You know, we are pen pals with some of the inmates. And you hear word from the wardens and the chaplains that mental well-being or the atmosphere is more positive having, you know, once we've left, like the environment becomes more creative. It has good health benefits. So we want to play there again, but also other artists shouldn't just confine their touring abilities to your standard venues. There's more to be had, you know.
Absolutely.
How did that first gig in a prison come about?
Well, we'd loved the idea ever, you know, since hearing Johnny Cash playing prisons, you know, San Quentin and so on. We thought we have to do that. But it turned out our manager, Dave Robinson, he used to look after Ian Dury and the Blockheads. And they played in prisons in the 70s, 80s. And so the kind of the idea met in the middle. And we play in Kent a lot. There's a great kind of tour circuit down there where we can play a month of gigs in a row, which is for, you know, which is ideal for a band like us, but it's also unique. There's not that setup of gigs anywhere else in the country, so we love it down there. And there was a guy there who works at one of the prisons who saw us and said, "Why don't you come play down at one of them?" So we jumped on the opportunity.
You know? I can imagine, yeah, and especially for a band like yourself that tap into like a very classic sound, like it's a very sort of it's a genre of very classic rock is what I get anyway when I listen to your music. So I can imagine those kind of experiences where you're almost like referring back to the greats like Johnny Cash. It's very in keeping with the kind of music that you're putting out as well.
Yeah, we listen to. You know, people say, "So are you a retro band?" And we're like, well, no, we're not. I think it would be silly, though, to ignore what's come before us. You can only build on your past. And some of that music, Johnny Cash, back to, you know, Bob Dylan, the band, Harlan Wolf, John Lee Hooker, these great singers, Aretha Franklin, that's the foundation. That is the pillar of rock history and where it is today. And there's a band like us where it's six individuals who are channeling all of our differences into one vision. You know, all these guys set the benchmark for that idea, for that you can, through your collective spirit and through your songs and your music, that you can make people pay attention and inspire perhaps. And so, you know, all of them artists, as you mentioned, Johnny Cash, we feel that way about, and we listen to modern music, you know, we listen to a lot of modern music, but it's singers like that that I'm always going back to, that send me back to square one.
And when you all sort of like originally got together, were you all sort of like sharing a similar sort of taste in music ideas and genres, or was that something that you just sort of evolved with as you went along?
Everybody has totally unique kind of growing up. For example, Ben was into the kind of heavier side of music. You know, Zach is very blues orientated. Me and Tom kind of on a similar level, you know, through the records we were played growing up and, you know, having always been side by side. And Andy, you know, the sax man, He's always been into the more kind of jazz soul areas, but these are all genres of music that we have all listened to individually. It's just obviously some people come at the band from different angles, and that's worked as a real treat, you know, because it's meant that each individual is their own ammunition, and it's meant that we can put that towards the one goal we have is to be, you know, the best band we can be. So that's worked well, and I think narrowing your influences down to one genre or idea is what people love in life, because it essentially it just limits people, it pigeonholes people, it's a form of control, and that's not something we want to touch on.
Do you think that's the problem with bands like Greta Van Fleet that have got so much stick from the music press, like Pitchfork and all that kind of thing, because it comes across so much like they are trying to tap in too much into a particular kind of sound?
I don't know, because I think they are, I mean, he's got an incredible voice. And I think it's easy for people to make comparisons. Whereas bands nowadays, I suppose, with the fast pace of society and the industry, it's more difficult for them to find space to progress into their own area where they are truly themselves. And I think Greta Van Fleet are doing that and have done that. But like any band, you start out imitating your heroes. That's how all my favorite artists started out, and what I did, and I'm sure it's what they've done. And I think, you know, credit to them for playing rock music in an era that's so heavily dominated by more hip-hop sounds. So I think it's difficult for any rock band to really, you know, stick it to the wider industry in the current age. So more credit to them for doing their bit.
It's fair enough.
Do you think rock is going to make a big comeback? Because like you say, we are in a very much a hip-hop pop era. And obviously there are still a lot of rock bands around. Do you think there'll be another big surge of rock in the charts?
Well, I think we're living through pop's Great Depression. And by that I mean it's kind of like there's this growing surge of kind of bedroom orientated sounds, which I struggle to understand, because when I see music, if I'm listening to music in my bedroom, I see it as a very outward kind of venture where I'm listening to it thinking, geez, I love this song, I love the words, I really believe in it, I want to get out there, and I want to tell people about this. I want to do it myself. I want to show people how this has inspired me. Whereas now it's totally like inverted, where people are in their rooms, you know, sunken under duvets, listening to music, thinking that this is a very quiet, insular experience. And the whole approach to discovering music has shifted so gravely. And that might be a good thing. I think it's good that people have access to create music, to express themselves from their rooms, but the kind of inherent kind of want to change, you know, to change something with what they're say, with music says, or with what lyrics says, has suffered for that.
So are you saying it's like a detrimental thing then, that's come out of this new generation of listening, where it has been, and producing music, where it has become very introverted, people being very sort of isolated in their thoughts and the way that they consume and listen to music? Do you think that's been a detrimental thing then to the way that music's being made now?
Well, I think there's never been so much opportunity for people to get their music heard, you know, Spotify, Apple Music, the internet, TikTok, it's all there, and that's great. But you know, the art form of just a song that stands up on itself, on its own legs, with just a guitar or a piano and somebody singing it, has suffered over. For instance, production is now favored over the idea of a good song, and I think it's easy to take something that's mediocre and to polish it up, and then for it to fit perfectly into some kind of online trend. And that's what's dangerous. It should be the other way around. You know, the music should come first. The song should stand up first and before it's polished up. And I think it's good that there's these opportunities for people. But as a songwriter, you'd like it to be you'd like it to come from somebody's heart and not to be so not to be a little kind of ditty just for someone to polish up into something more commercial.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys have always kind of been very much about the music, not to something that's, you know, gonna go viral on TikTok sort of thing. But do you have, is it a sort of, with social media, is it a trend that you guys have like tried jumping onto, you know, doing all the whole, obviously you're on Instagram and you've got a couple thousand followers on there. How much sort of, yeah, how much significance do you put on building your social media?
Oh yeah, completely. Like, this is not me saying that it's irrelevant. It's like more relevant than ever. And it's something that we are trying to build, and we, you know, we're putting more videos up now than we ever have and trying to post more content. And that's the thing, during lockdown, we've done some live streams, one from PRG, which is a big lighting warehouse in Birmingham. And that's had over like 30,000 views. We've also been doing my own radio show, which is on our Patreon page. So I kind of talk through what I've been listening during the week. And so, yeah, man, it's so important. And you know, as a band, we just want to get out there and tour so that we have, you know, more to post about. There was this thing at the start of lockdown where you had all the social media influencers panicking because they couldn't go anywhere. They couldn't go to a beach to take a photo. So they were like looking out for old content. So that's been our lives for a little while.
So have you always sort of used Patreon, or is that something that's sort of come out of lockdown and not being able to gig?
Yeah, that's new for us. Usually we kind of sustain ourselves through gigging. So that's, as I mentioned, playing everywhere under the sun, and because we love doing it ultimately, but it keeps kind of a roof over our head. So during lockdown, when there was no gigs, we figured, well, we want to keep people involved without kind of rebranding ourselves. So we came up with Patreon, where we can continue to just be, you know, do what we do, play live, some concerts in our studio. We can put up the radio show. We can share snippets of new songs and just basically document our lives during this process. And so we've enjoyed that. It seemed like the next kind of, it's like a natural way of doing social media in a way.
Yeah, yeah, and especially with the gigging and live venues, of course, that's something we've not been able to do too much of at the moment. But that is your marketing, isn't it? That's the best way of marketing you in terms of like your personalities and what you're putting out, is by, you know, actually making that connection with your audience in a physical sort of way. But you've also tried your hand at the live stream gigs as well. Like you put up a live streamed gig as well. How was that dynamic, knowing that there were so many people watching you, but you weren't actually physically able to see them?
Yeah, yes, it was strange recording it, you know, with the cameraman and everything, because there was these like NASA like operatives, you know, there's like 20 people all socially distanced with these big headsets on and huge cameras, and they were filming us, and we'd perform a song to the people watching, and great, not knowing the reaction we're getting there, but also not getting a reaction from the other 20 or 30 people in the room who were filming us. Oh. So it was really odd for us, and we thought, well, this could be going either way here.
And we sounds like quite a surreal sort of experience, but being watched by a ton of people in masks and socially distanced out and everything, and, you know, perform a song and like, all right, and then nothing.
No, I know. So we'd kind of, 3 minutes in, we'd be really going for it, and then silence at the end. But the people filming it at PRG were really fantastic, and that was, we were desperate to do another one of them, actually.
It looked so cool when I saw clips of it and stuff, because it looked like one of them sort of classic Leonard Skinner shows, you know, where they used to fly the Confederate flag in the background. You had the Cumbria flag flying, and it was just like full of like pride to be from the county. It was
someone said we're the Cumbrian rednecks.
It makes sense. You were just tapping into some like Cumbrian pride that I don't think we've seen enough of in the music that's come out.
Well, that's it. You know, we're Cumbrian through and through.
It definitely shows.
Yeah, that's quite interesting, actually, because a lot of northern bands, when they're sort of up and coming, they just all seem to flock to either like Liverpool or Manchester. But you guys have been like, nope, we're Cumbrian and we're staying here.
That's an interesting point, because I think your hometown, where you come from, is your identity. Like, you've grown up here for 20 years, you know the streets, you know the people, you know the kind of the rhythm of your local life. And then you think, well, I'm a singer, so I must leave to London right away, or I must go to Manchester. And there's a good scene there, but like for me personally, I feel if I went there, I'd kind of lose, I'd as soon as you become part of a scene, you lose part of where you come from. And, you know, where you come from, especially in these times, is all you have, really. Like, you only have time and where you come from. And to lose that, it would be dangerous for any band. You know, U2, Dublin, you know, the bands, the Smiths, you know, Manchester. These are the bands that have touched people. And I really think that their roots has a big part to play in that.
So you've got some sort of hometown gigs hopefully going ahead this summer and later in the year. Do you sort of feel the love when you're playing Carlisle in comparison to, you know, it's your hometown? Does everyone sort of like recognise you and really support you in comparison, you know, if you go a bit further afield?
Well, playing in Carlisle is up there with our, you know, favourite parts of the year. Like, we've, for the last couple of years, every Christmas time, we'd do these big Lindisfarne-esque celebratory gigs at the Brickyard, you know, two nights back to back. After all the touring we've done throughout the country, we'll come back to Carlisle and have a big celebration. So it's just great seeing all the local people, everybody that's been around us. And we like giving that back to the people that have always had our back. So obviously, we haven't played in Carlisle last year because of lockdown. So we've decided to host a big summertime gig in Carlisle at a venue I'm not sure any Carlisle band has played at before, which is St. Cuthbert's Church in the city centre. So this is on July the 9th. This is going to be a huge celebration. We can't wait to play back in the hometown again. And to play people our new music, our album, The Borderland, which is also out in July. And I think after this lockdown that we've had for a year, it's a real excitement that's building around for everybody to get back to live music, but especially for us to be playing in our hometown once again.
So obviously this year has been a tough year for bands and for small venues as well. What are your thoughts on how these small venues have been treated, and what do you think we all need to do going forward to sort of rebuild some of these smaller venues?
I think it's disgraceful how the venues have been treated, you know, and the whole music arts industry at large. You know, independent venues like the Brickyard or the Source in Carlisle are the foundation of music culture in this area. You know, it's where you've, as a 16-year-old, I first went to discover the bands that I love today. It's where I aspired to play when I was younger. And I think, you know, these, on a kind of economic point, these industries bring over £10 billion into the economy every year. It's shameful, really. You know, these, as I say, these venues need supported. They are dying by the day, and they breed some of the best talent, musical talent around the world. And that's what's unique about the UK, I think. There is a long-standing, rich history of independent venues that have continued to support upcoming talent and to give people a break. music where otherwise there might be none. So that's so important to support that. And I think as soon as the whole opens up again, you know, I look forward to getting out to these independent venues and to supporting them, you know, for the national idea that, you know, because to support the arts, but also very locally, you know, they need support from local people.
Yeah, man. They've got to get on down to the local venues and stuff. We talked a lot about live gigging, the venues, all that kind of thing. Where have been some of your favourite ones? I just wondered if you could, you know, give us your craziest rock and roll story from the band's history so far.
The craziest rock and roll. Jeez, it's all very rock and roll. All right, once we played with Bob Dylan in Hyde Park, and the best day of our lives, you can imagine. We afterwards, there was a party going on, but it wasn't, you know, even though we'd played the show, it was for the kind of like the agents and the managers, you know, it was for the real kind of the people up the top. So we couldn't quite get in. So we thought, well, we've just played this gig. We are going to the after party. So we kind of cut ourselves a hole in the barrier and we broke through. And it was this incredible party full of people, you know, you only read about. And we're at the bar and it's this free bar having this great time. And Ben, our bass player, he's away chatting to this lady, this blonde haired lady. And he's chatting away, chatting her up, having a great time. And he gets a tap on his shoulder. He gets a tap on his shoulder. And he turns around and it's Noel Gallagher. And Noel Gallagher, Ben turns around and looks at him. And Noel says to him, he says, "Do you like sex and travel?" He says, "Do you like sex and travel?" And Ben's like, "Well, what the fuck's going on?" And he just goes, "Yeah, of course, I do." And Noel Gallagher goes, "Well, fuck off then." Because Ben was chatting up Noel Gallagher's wife.
Oh!
So it was this kind of real moment of, yeah, it made our year.
Oh my god.
So you had to like quickly dive through that hole that you cut in the fence and make a leg for it.
No, I just left him hanging.
Oh, what a friend.
That was a really good moment.
I just have one last question, and every episode, because we're releasing these weekly, we've asked all the guests to sort of give us one song that has either inspired them or and that'll be sort of like our song of the week kind of thing. Yeah. So, yes, please, any song that you think everybody needs to listen to.
Good question. Any song in the world. I think a good Bob Dylan starting point is Like a Rolling Stone. You know, that snare drum kicks down the door to all popular music. And it redefined what music was in our culture, both on a kind of both lyrically and musically. The idea that this song over 6 minutes was on the radio, you know, back in the 60s, that's quite a feat. I think that song encapsulates the most seminal moments in rock and roll history, and without it, I don't think I'd have been as inspired to write music. So let's go Like a Rolling Stone, Bob Dylan.
It's an awesome shout.
Thank you.
I think you've got some incredible stuff lined up, and you know, I'm looking forward to following you guys and seeing what's down the road.
Thanks for having me on. We'll see you in church.
Thanks for listening to this episode with Johnny Foster. What a great guy. And so many great moments in this conversation as well that I just enjoyed listening back to as well. And just guy that's full of personality, and they're going to go far with those guys, Hardwick Circus. So go and have a listen to them. Check out The Borderland. And yeah, it's going to be a really good album, I reckon. Don't forget as well, you can also find out more updates about Lucrative by going to the Lucrative Facebook page and dropping a like and a subscribe on there, or a follow, or whatever it is. Send a carrier pigeon if need be. But yeah, drop us a like and a follow on there, and then you can stay up to date with all of the stuff related to the show. Or even better, you could even subscribe and follow on your chosen streaming platform as well. Yes, that might even get you some more up-to-date on when next episodes are coming and what have you. So that would be even better as well. And it helps me out. Throw me a bone. And if you want to see more of what I'm up to, then you can also go to Luke Smithhurst Audio. That's also on Facebook at the moment. And you can check me out on there and see what else I've been up to. We'll get some more current social medias added to that roster as well, like some Instagrams and that. I promise. We will get there eventually. But thank you very much for listening. I'll see you next weekend for a brand new episode.